Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Yud Zayin B'Iyar, Parashas Bechukosai, Tavshinayin Vav, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 24 May, 2016, webcasting from the land of the people of the book today, barraged by anti-Jew words and concepts. Take, for example, an award ceremony at Tel Aviv University on Sunday, the presentation of the Dan David Prizes, $3 million divided between 8 winners. Though one of the winners boycotted the ceremony, failed to show up, and turned down the gift of like $300,000. This is Dr. Professor Catherine Hall, whom Wikipedia calls a British feminist historian of modern British social and cultural history at University College London. One of her books was entitled Gendered Nations, Nationalisms and Gender Order in the Long 19th Century. And she turned down the award because, as she wrote on a Facebook post, that she had made, quote, an independent political choice undertaken after many discussions with those who are deeply involved with the politics of Israel-Palestine, but with different views as to how best to act, close quote. And there you have it, Israel-Palestine. That's a relatively new addition to the dictionary of anti-Jew buzzwords and catchphrases. It is evidence of the title of my book, A Nationality Never Heard of in History. Never heard in the land of Israel, possibly the land with the oldest continuous written record in countless languages. Suddenly emerges a people claiming to be an ancient Palestinian people, here since the beginning of time, and contemporary anti-Jews post-Holocaust have now a new legitimate way for hating Jews. You know, before World War II, anti-Semitic ideas had been around for decades without any notion that Jews were to be physically eliminated, the anti-Semites said. It was a legitimate body of ideas, so to speak, and wrestled with the very real problem of the friction in modern society made by the presence of emancipated Jews. They were officially enfranchised in the Napoleonic era, liberated from ghettos, literally. Many of them also stopped wearing distinctively Jewish clothes. They cut off their beards. They stopped keeping kosher. But even so, many Gentiles were uncomfortable in their presence. Anti-Semitism as a word and concept arose to explain why that was. This was the age as well of the higher criticism, biblical criticism, as it was called, which was basically a declaration of war against the Bible as a phony, sacred document. It was the age of Darwin, the naturalist, and his theory of evolution. And anti-Semitism was a kind of crank race theory in that spirit, trying to understand Jew hatred after Christians had lost their faith. The first anti-Semites, as no longer Christians, said nothing of Jews as Christ killers when they themselves no longer believed in Jesus of Nazareth as God Messiah. Anti-Semitism was a response to the intermingling of Jews among Gentiles who were uncomfortable with that. It was also in response to the flooding of Western Europe with Jews fleeing Tsarist oppression. In Vienna, in 1897, the year of the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland, Karl Luger was elected mayor on the anti-Semitic party. Remember, anti-Semitism was not associated with death camps. And his party was responding to this influx of impoverished Yiddish-speaking refugees. In a way, it was very much like today's anti-immigrant feelings in Europe. People put off by this tidal wave of Muslims flooding the continent. But after the Holocaust, after World War II, anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic lies and jokes suddenly became taboo in polite company. The exposure of the death camps, which everyone in the West saw when they went to the cinema, to the movies in 1945, saw in the newsreels. Auschwitz is where that crackpot theory wound up. Initially, it was not homicidal, but that's where it terminated. And what people saw was such a disgusting revelation. You couldn't talk anti-Semitism anymore in polite society. It would trigger in people's minds those newsreels that they had seen. Not a good idea to tell a Jew joke around the dinner table without causing some nausea when you want to chow down. So anti-Semitism went out the window as a once acceptable use of language. And for two decades after Israel was born, Israel was spared that kind of talk in the West. But after the Six-Day War and the real return of the Jews, not just to the land, but Jerusalem and the Temple Mount, well, this triggered a new way of returning to legitimate kosher Jew bashing. It was the invention of the Palestinians that led this feminist historian in London to turn up her nose at a prize in light of what she said were the politics in Israel-Palestine. Inventing the Palestinians was also inventing Palestine, as if in history there had been such a country inhabited by people who called themselves Palestinians and were called Palestinians by others. This from a woman who I presume is a tenured professor of history, this feminist who writes of gender and its connection to colonialism. She evidently has swallowed like a communion wafer the Palestinian narrative, according to which the land the Jews called the land of Israel, the Palestinians have called Palestine, and they have an equal claim on the land of Palestine, don't you think? I mean, the mind, the human mind, the computer, that is the mind, connects words. It knows that France belongs to the French and China to the Chinese and Turkey to the Turks, so Palestine belongs to the Palestinians. And since the Jews are not Palestinians, they are an occupation of Palestinian land. This is the Orwellian rape and mutilation of known history that this feminist historian is a party to. This business of Israel-Palestine is hyphenated evidence of what I'm talking about. Locked in embrace, Israel and Palestine are equally valid names for the same territory both have the same right to ownership of. My book makes abundantly clear that the Arab-Muslim response to the League of Nations mandate for Palestine, i.e. for establishing Palestine as a Jewish homeland, was to deny there was such a country as Palestine. The extant Muslim-Turkish map of the region showed no such country with that name. The Arab-Muslim response, Haj Amin al-Husseini's response, was to establish a newspaper in Jerusalem and call it Southern Syria, whose name was the paper's raison d'etre, its reason for being, that to resist the creation of a map called Palestine. And that was his and the Arabs' position until the 1960s. The invention of the Palestinians, this murder of history, also was behind the news this week of Bernie Sanders, the communist of Jewish descent, who wants to see in the Democratic Party platform changes that better reflect Palestinian aspirations for statehood. This is the language of anti-Semitism in our time. Palestinian aspirations for statehood. No longer do we hear Christ killer or Jews are capitalist pigs. Today the Jews are the guilty party who prevent the Palestinians from realizing their aspirations to statehood. Bernie Sanders, of course, opposes settlement expansion. And most prominently, he judged Israel's military behavior in 2014 to have been disproportionate, meaning more than was necessary and likely due to what, Israel's cruel desire for revenge. Every time Israel responds, men like Bernie Sanders will say it was disproportionate. And now in the wake of Bernie last week saying he wants to see a platform more supportive of the Palestinians' aspirations for statehood, these are three new words, three nasty, distorted words. First, Palestinian is the core lie of our time, for there's nothing Palestinian about these Palestinians. The second word here, aspirations, is etymologically related to the word for spirit. An aspiration is not just for something mundane, but elevated, noble, even divine. And more than a state, they want statehood, which is a state of being, of equal equality in the world alongside the Jews, who won't let them have their state that they aspire to and have from time immemorial. Oh, how they aspire to Palestinian. This narrative is this generation's successor to deicide. For thousands of years, Jews were slaughtered for being guilty, every one of them, for the death of Jesus. A monstrous lie, finally jettisoned by Rome in 1965, but in its place has come the tale of the crucified Palestinians, who were as much the victims of the Jews as Jesus was. And today, in the wake of Bernie's plea for the crucified Palestinians, the Democratic Party's platform committee invited three veteran anti-Jews: Cornel West, a race hustler like Obama; James Zogby, a mouthpiece for the PLO Jew Killers for years, and Michigan Congressman Keith Ellison, the ignorant of black history politician, black history under Islam, who converted to that nasty religion. West has said that the crimes of Hamas pale in the face of the U.S.-supported Israeli slaughters of innocent civilians. The slaughter of innocents. That episode is right there, almost at the very beginning of the New Testament. We'll be right back. Yeah, it is words that construct our reality, which makes sense. The Torah Mishnah begins with speech. And God said, let there be light. And God said, let there be this and let there be that. Creation is the product of speech. And that has been the process over the last half century, the creation of a vocabulary to discuss Israel that is tendentiously weighted against Israel, starting with the word Palestinians, a people about which nothing is known, not its language, its culture, its history, its wars, its heroes, its kings. Nothing is known except that it's very old and had its entire country stolen by the Jews. I find the whole business a cosmic puzzlement. Last time, I took note of the endless parade of peace conferences since the 1930s that have never succeeded because they never have faced the truth about this conflict. It's always discussed under a vast camouflage netting of words. Yesterday, the Prime Minister met with French Foreign Minister Manuel Valls, who presented France's plan for that June 3rd conclave of 20-plus nations now, down from 30, who believe they are wiser about Israel than Israelis themselves. This gabfest will lead in the fall to a real peace conference in which Palestinians and Israelis will participate. That's the plan. Bibi, of course, repeated that the only talking Israel will do is face-to-face with the PLO. Emmanuel Valls said that on June 3rd, the conferees will, quote, discuss trust-building measures to help lay the groundwork for renewed talks, close quote. I read this stuff and wonder, what has this man been smoking? He wants to build trust between us and Abbas, whose media every day prints and its electronic stuff pours out these medieval legends and folktales about Jewish evil. The current peace process is over 2 decades old now, and there has never been an ounce of trust by sober Israelis in these neighbors of ours who, over these 23 years of the Oslo Peace Accords, have periodically erupted in murder, murdering us many times. And they still do. With these people, we're supposed to build trust. The Oslo process was delusional from day one because its architects were among the most foolish Jews in the history of this people. Post-religious mockers of Jewishness they were, these self-identified leftists, these socialists of some stripe. And in their world, politics is waving the flag of a noble idea and pursuing it no matter how detached from reality it is. In the minds of Jews like this, how nice it would be for the Palestinians to have their own state snuggled right up next to our state, and when that happens, they will become wonderful neighbors. And never mind, that pipe dream never comes out of the water pipes smoked by the Arabs, by the Muslims. They have very different aspirations. They share none of this ecumenical kumbaya fantasy. One can only wonder at people like Emmanuel Valls, who apparently take seriously the project of building trust between us and these intellectual primitives who cannot accept that historical fact, the historical fact that what they call Haram al-Sharif is our Temple Mount. Like Obama, who cannot speak expressions like Islamic terrorism, Muslim terrorists, the Arabs here cannot say Haram al-Sharif used to be the Jewish Temple Mount. And what's truly astonishing is that until the year 2000, this was rock-bottom Islamic teaching. There was no greater proof in the world that Islam is the correct religion, the final installment of monotheism, than the capture of the Jews' Temple Mount and the building on that site of the Dome of the Rock, where Islam teaches Muhammad himself stood before jumping up into the sky, up to heaven, rising through its 7 heavens, that's an image they stole from the Talmud, where he met all the previous prophets, starting with Adam and Noah and Abraham, etc., before descending back down to the Temple Mount, where he remounted his flying horse and flew back to Mecca. That was the Muslim narrative since the beginning and until the year 2000. Now saying that it used to belong to the Jews is heresy. With people like this, it is unreal to expect us to build trust. They betray their own doctrine with this new nonsense, and with betrayers one does not put his trust. This French initiative is so bizarre, for among other things, it's unreality. What do they expect to accomplish with this June 3rd coffee clutch and an even bigger gabfest in the fall. Are they so incapable of true empathy toward Israel that they are blind to their own suggestion that Israel participate in what would obviously be a kangaroo court that will rule that the just solution is for the Jews to be expelled from Judea and Samaria and all of it turned over to the Arabs, be they from Fatah or Hamas, funded by Iran? Is this the scenario that Valls and Holland have in mind? And there are rumors that their final solution will also order the Muslims to respect Israel's security concerns and maybe even recognize Israel's right to exist. But I ask, so what? These are words, and the Arabs have no respect for words. Certainly if not was written in history books, they don't respect what they sign their names to. The so-called Saudi peace plan of 2002, delivered to the West by errand boy Thomas Friedman, offers normal diplomatic relations with all Arab states once Israel returns the land it stole. This plan appeals only to men like Friedman, these de-Judaized types, who pine for the Arabs' recognition and friendship. When I say, who needs relations with these countries? And in any case, the Arabs can establish diplomatic relations with Israel on a Monday morning, then break them on Tuesday. It's an inhuman document for offering to Israel terms no sober nation in the same position would accept. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. To continue ruminating on our world constructed of words, expressions, and phrases, I see where in New York City on Sunday, the Jerusalem Post gathering with its panel of speakers before an audience of 1,500 listened to Congressman Ed Royce, Republican of California, chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And he was worried, in my words, about the secret agent in the Oval Office stabbing Israel in the back at the UN before he leaves office. He said that more nicely. And he said of the French initiative, he doubts the French resolution on Israel before the Security Council would include, quote, a demand for security, close quote, for the Jewish state. And I say using that language is also camouflage for what is really needed. Not that Ed Royce is even aware of that, this friend of Israel. This expression, demand for security, is a result of Israel's misperception of its own situation. Since 1967, the common approach of Israel from the left and the right is to hold out returning some of the land taken in 1967 because Israel has security concerns. That's how they describe it, or security interests. And why does Israel have security interests? And the answer is because the Arabs and the Turks and the Persians, Muslims all, do not respect the right of Jews to live free of Muslim rule in their ancient homeland. So even after creating such a mini-state for the so-called Palestinians, the danger would continue. What is at stake is not Israel's security interests, but the reason it fears its neighbors, who have a bloody record in every year for more than a century of murdering us from time to time, it's because its neighbors don't respect its right to live at all. The good news is that the Prime Minister's pre-recorded statement to the J-Post gathering in New York referenced the constant flow of anti-Semitic bile in Arab and Muslim media, especially in children's programming, where Jews are described as apes and pigs who have to be destroyed. And I consider this progress for Israel. It has not been Israeli practice to call attention to this low-level lunatic Jew hatred, and I'm glad to see it finally making a serious appearance. Speaking of which, we haven't posted a link for a while, but the one posted with this webcast is a must-see. It's an authentic anti-Jew temper tantrum rant by an out-of-control Arab Muslim, and it is the face of Jew hatred for centuries. One gets a taste of it sometimes in the talkbacks, which are short, but this is a couple of minutes of insane Jew hatred. And I think it's a splendid example of the hatred of Jews burning in the minds and hearts of some people for centuries. What Israel and its supporters never say, but should say, is that today's Arabs, today's Muslims, are at least as crazy about Jews as the most ardent European Nazi enthusiasts were last century. And I believe they're even more far gone in their seething hatred of Jews, expressed in the most outlandish fantasies of Jewish conspiracies and plots, like 9/11 was the Mossad, and I believe in Egypt already since the last bombing out of the sky of an Egyptian airplane a few days ago. They're saying that the U.S. and Israel were behind it. With such people, Emmanuel Valls wants us to develop trust. And I hope Prime Minister Netanyahu continues down this path of shining a light into the dark cellars of the Arab and Muslim mind. I hope he continues to expose what PMW posts every week, the anti-Semitic poison pouring out of this community on a par with anything the Nazis put out about evil Jews. The world sees the poor, poor Palestinians aspiring for their ancient homeland, and I see demented savages whose inner life is as primitive as any drunken crusader thug 1,000 years ago hacking Jews to pieces at random as he's made his way to the Holy Land. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da Last item, more good news from the United Methodist Church in conference in Portland, Oregon. Last week, if you remember, they rejected 4 BDS resolutions, and they've now decided to accept a petition calling for ending their organization's involvement in the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. Good for them. And in a separate step, good for them again. They had a resolution deciding not to renew UMC's 40-year support for Roe v. Wade, the legislation by the degenerate U.S. Supreme Court in the early 1970s to approve of intrauterine infanticide. Which reminds me of another miserable corruption of language. I saw on a related story. The Republicans in the Oklahoma legislature are also out to criminalize abortion. And this was protested by the Center for Reproductive Rights. Spokeswoman Amanda Allen said, "It's unconstitutional to prevent women's access to a vital health care service." And what struck yours truly was the name of her pro-abortion outfit, the Center for Reproductive Rights. Could there be a more dishonest name for her group? They campaign not for the right to reproduce. No woman's right to reproduce is at risk. The issue is not the right to reproduce, but the right to kill after having reproduced. It's the right to destroy what was reproduced. More Orwellian verbal perversion. Okay, that's it for this Tuesday evening, and I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.